Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to episode 171 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod and I'm so happy that you are joining me today. If this is your first time on the show, welcome, welcome, welcome. Twice a week we'll bring you the best and brightest minds in Magic the Gathering to share with you tips and tricks to help you take your game to the next level. And if you've been with the show for a while, thank you. I love doing this for you. I love connecting. Last month in January was a record-breaking month as far as downloads go, so that was absolutely awesome to see. Thank you so much for tuning in and sharing it with your friends. It really, really means a lot to me. Speaking of the end of January, now that we are in February, next week I'll be announcing the winner of the patron-exclusive giveaway. So each and every month I do a drawing and send some cool magic product to a patron. mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. So basically you can pledge any amount you want per episode, set a monthly limit so you never go out of your budget, and then each and every month I will do a drawing exclusive to the patrons as a thank you and a way to give back. So thank you so much to all the patrons. I really, really appreciate your support. Now, before we dive into the interview, I do want to mention Snapcardster. You heard me mention this last episode, and I'll definitely be mentioning it a few more times here in the month of February because it is a brand new all-in-one magic app that Pierre Reichelson, if you remember back in episode 142, he was the guest then, is putting together. Him and a team of young magic enthusiasts are putting together a super fast card scanning feature to categorize your magic collection. In addition to that, they're going to have a magic news timeline, a swipe to buy and swipe to sell feature, as well as local trading options. So it's a really cool all-in-one magic app. Right now, they are on Kickstarter. This month, they're raising funds to take the app from Android to iOS. So right now, the open beta is on Android, and they want to obviously develop the app for iOS. So snapcardster.com/Kickstarter is where you can go to check that out. They're actually doing really well. They just launched at the beginning of the week, and they're just over 1,000 euros at this point. But they need your help to make their funding goals. So if this interests you at all, go to snapcardster.com/Kickstarter. So I have actually been using the beta version of the app, and it is pretty cool. The scanning feature is really neat and very fast, and I like that. And I'm really excited to see what they can do with this and where they'll go. And that's really it for the top of the interview stuff. I'm really excited for our guest. He is someone who has been behind the Wizard's Curtain over there as an employee, and I really love having these type of guests on the show, so I can't wait to bring him in, sit down, and talk about magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a senior editor inside Magic R&D. He is a former level 3 judge, competed at the Pro Tour 4 times, and holds the record for the longest tenured Magic rules manager. He's the lead editor for Magic Duels and the upcoming Magic sets Amonkhet and Hour of Devastation. Coming to us from Seattle, Washington, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Matt Tabak. Matt, how are you doing today?
Sean, I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I am so ready for this. That introduction was so awesome. I want everyone to focus on the important part of that intro, and that is my 8 lifetime pro points.
Excellent.
That is why I'm sitting here right now. I am 142 points away from Hall of Fame eligibility.
Almost there.
I want everyone to know about it.
So. As soon as they lift the ban on Magic employees going to the Pro Tour.
Exactly.
You'll be there.
The only thing holding me back.
So, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Matt, the best place to do that is on Twitter. He's at Tabak Rules, and that's Tabak rhymes with payback, which is kind of fun. So, anyways, Tabak Rules on Twitter. So, hit him up. Say thanks for being on the show. Ask him follow-up questions. He's pretty active out there. So, Matt, we love diving into our guests a little bit and learning about them outside Magic before we do the Magic stuff. So, I'm assuming you're not born and raised in the Washington area?
No, I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, back in 1822. My family lived there for a couple of years. My dad got a job with a toy distributor. We were actually one of the first families that we knew that had the original Atari. So, give you an idea of how far back that goes. So he got a job, and we moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, which is where I grew up. Lived there for most of my life. And ended up coming up to the Seattle area about 9 years ago now. Was actually hired by a different game company to produce a different game, a card game 4 of you may have heard of called The Spoils. That opportunity didn't pan out, so found myself in need of a job, and Wizards was hiring, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Excellent. So what was your introduction to Magic then? What was the very first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
So the very first time I actually saw Magic cards, I was with my family. We were on a trip to California. We do like a little theme park family vacation thing. And we stopped in a Gamekeeper, and on the shelf, they had starter decks of Alpha. This is like when Magic first came out. It was early 94 or late 93, somewhere. It was like around the holidays, 93. So late December, might have been early January. And we picked up a deck. You know, the guy working at the store said it was the cool new thing. People were loving it. So I bought the deck and read the cards. Cards seemed really cool. I, you know, loved the flavor. But I didn't have anyone to play with. None of my friends had heard of the game. No one was really interested in playing it. So that deck kind of ended up in my closet. Fast forward about 3 years later, 97, I'm in college, and a group of my friends then really started getting into it. So that's when I actually started playing. And actually when I moved from either into the dorms or into the dorms, I found my first tournament pack of Alpha and reclaimed those cards. There was nothing good in there.
I was gonna say anything good in there.
I was hoping for a cool story for like, and I had a Mox Emerald or, you know, something, but nah, it was nothing. I think one of my rares might have been a basic land.
Oh, okay. Yeah, solid. I love it. That's some good Magic times.
Those were the days.
So let's see, what is your favorite set?
My favorite set is probably the original Ravnica.
Ooh.
I feel like that's the one where I was playing the most and kind of had the most success. Ravnica Limited got me onto the Pro Tour as an individual.
Cool.
Kind of felt like that. Yeah, that was sort of the heyday of my playing career, and that was played a ton of Magic Online when Ravnica was out. So probably Ravnica. After that, I think Invasion was one of my favorites.
So if you lived on Ravnica, so not not what deck combination do you like the most, but if you lived there, which guild would you be in?
I'm Gruul.
Okay.
Through and through. There is only so much area on Earth, and it is my goal to take up as much of it as possible.
Excellent.
And consume the weak and small around me. Now, you know, when talk about the guilds, everyone is like, oh, you're a rules manager, so you must be Azorius. Shut up. Gruul.
Love it. Love it. And what is one of your favorite cards?
Oh, I've got a lot of favorite cards. So for a very long time, my favorite card was Hidden Path, an enchantment from the dark. I think all green creatures have Forest Walk. That was the very first deck that I built, that like I built from scratch. It was my deck, was Hidden Path and Gaia's Liege. So that was kind of like an early favorite. Other favorite cards throughout time have been Prodigal Sorcerer was my favorite card for a while. I definitely loved Tim's. Icy Manipulator was a favorite card of mine, especially in the early days. More recent cards include, I like Rakdos, the guy, not the guild.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I like the guild too, but he's a favorite of mine. It kind of ebbs and flows.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. So, Matt, what makes Magic fun for you? Why, here you are involved with Magic, you know, quite heavily all these years later, but what kept you around? Why did you play it? Why did you decide to start working at Wizards? Like, what makes Magic fun for you?
So, there are a lot of things that make Magic fun. Like, probably my favorite part about it is, right now, my favorite part about it as an employee is, like, traveling around, like even just going to local stores and just meeting people that play and are just like, oh, you know, we have so much fun. And it's, you know, because of a product that you work on or something, you know, that I contribute to. So that's pretty awesome. You know, I see families play together and husbands and wives play together and parents and kids, and like seeing them come together because of our work. That's pretty awesome. When I was a player, when I was just a player, I mean, I still play, but when I was, you know, didn't work here, what I really liked about it was just multiple times a week gathering with like my friends. Like, it's cheesy because it's in the name Magic the Gathering, but like literally going to the store with my friends, we'd get together, we'd draft, you know, 2-3 times a week, or go to, you know, Friday Night Magic, even though back then there was no Friday Night Magic, but we did play Magic on Friday nights. But just an excuse to get out and go to the same place and talk about the same things and, you know, talk about what cards are cool and what decks we lost to last week and this crazy new ability that Wizards made, and what the hell are they thinking? And then seeing it from the other side and going, these players, they didn't love our new mechanic. What the hell are they thinking? You know, things like that. But I think it's just, I'm a real big fan of that because, you know, I'm from the, I'm old is really what I'm trying to say. And I'm from the generation, like, I like getting together with people and, you know, face-to-face gaming. So I'm all about that. I mean, I love digital games too. I play a lot of Magic Online. I play a lot of other computer games and, you know, mobile, but getting together with your friends, that's pretty sweet for me.
It is, absolutely. And speaking of, you know, cool things and what's Wizard doing, like, we would love, I mean, we're going to dive into, you know, you and your special position, and we have a lot of questions that were submitted by some of the listeners, and we want to dive into that. So the questions that came were right after the bannings, so I just want to put to rest right now. Do you have anything to do with bannings?
My only job with bannings is I make sure that the Gatherer folks know about them.
Okay.
I'm not super plugged into Standard right now. I was always more of a limited player. Like, if we talk about my judging career, I would always judge everything constructed and try to play in everything limited. So I'm not super plugged into the constructed format, so I don't really have a big, like, I don't have a seat at the table.
All right, so Prodigy's out there, and all you listeners, you can put away the pitchforks, because it's not Matt's fault that, you know, Emrakul's gone or anything like that. He had nothing to do with it, so I'll skip those questions.
It's not important to me that we assign blame, but it is important to me that if we are assigning blame, it's not to me.
Okay. I like that. That's going to be
the quote. I can throw my fellow employees under the bus. I'm more than willing to do this. I will drive the bus if I need to.
I love it. So these are in no particular order. First one is, what's the most notable ruling you have ever made? And real quick, everyone who submitted questions, thank you so much. I did not write down the names of who these people come from, so I really apologize for not giving you credit, but we're still going to get through as many as we can. So Matt, what is the most notable ruling you have ever made?
All right, so the most notable ruling I can think of was notable for me personally. I don't know if it had a real big impact on the program or other people, but I remember head judging a Pro Tour qualifier. I don't remember a lot of the details. I know it was like 1942, and it was sealed deck. And I remember I disqualified a kid for submitting a 59-card deck list because that's what we were told to do at the time. Because having an illegal deck list was the most egregious foul a Magic player could possibly commit. And it was as I was processing this disqualification. This kid's like 11 years old, and he paid his $35. And I talked the TO into refunding his money. But that's, you know, whatever. Like, he was there to play in a PTQ, and we robbed him of that. It was when, as I was issuing this ruling, that it occurred to me that two things. One, just because Wizards makes a rule doesn't mean it's right. And two, the players are important, right? Player experience is important, and we should do better. And I was super happy. Like, this is way early in Magic. So, I mean, I DQ'd for an illegal deck list to give you an idea of how long ago this was. But Wizards realized it, and those rules changed, and we are constantly working on making things not suck for players. That's not a logo we're going to put on our brochure or anything. But I think making things not suck for players is pretty important. So that was pretty notable for me, like, as a judge. Like, I'm basically here to entertain people for an hour under the guise of running a Magic tournament for them. So, like, them having fun is super important.
Excellent. So I love that. And thank you for coming out and making it known. And I mean, that's not a secret, obviously. Like, it's very apparent in a lot of things that Wizard does, that Wizards is trying to make the game good for players, whatnot. But, you know, sometimes people get all crazy about stuff and we kind of forget that, you know, and it's nice to hear that you guys do think about it and we are in, you know, the front of your minds and really trying to make it a good experience for us. So thank you.
Oh yeah. I mean, players are at the heart of everything we do. I mean, that's not to say we're not going to make mistakes. That's not to say we're not, you know, we're still a business. We're going to make certain decisions based on certain things, but ultimately, like, we're better off if everyone's happy. So that the quickest road to growing the game is making sure everyone's happy. So
yeah, totally agree.
That's just common sense for me.
So Matt, regarding the New World Order, which was implemented, what, about 2011, how would you describe the consequences that the change brought in the way that the rules and the card templates are done? Did it have any impact at all?
Well, yeah, a little bit. And now I just have the New World Order theme running through my head. Hopefully it's not there for life. Hey, if I can't make 90s wrestling jokes, what am I doing here? So NWO is, we don't actually use that term internally much anymore. I think like most of the people who started working at Wizards like this year kind of know about it from Rosewater's articles, but it's, you know, not something we actively talk about. So basically what it is kind of a realization that Magic is a big game. It just gets bigger. We're in year like 24. We really need to address complexity. Like Magic is this super complex game. There are a lot of moving parts. And if you overwhelm people with it, no one's going to stick around to play your game. And Magic is awesome, but it does have a pretty steep learning curve. Like, learning to play the game is the most significant challenge. Once you get into it, you realize, hey, this game's pretty awesome. It's deep. It's cool. I get to make fun decisions, and the characters are awesome, and yada, yada. But it's super complex. So, R&D, what we need to do is kind of tone down the complexity at common, because commons are the cards that players see more often. They have more of them, especially when they're new, right? They start buying some booster packs. Most of their cards are common. So we want to make sure that the game is approachable and not super intimidating. So what it's done is basically forced us to look at new mechanics, some individual cards. But like I said, it's mostly a common philosophy. So a lot of your more complex, what some would say more interesting cards still show up at Rare and Mythic Rare.
So to give everybody a little more context, before we dive into mechanics and your interaction with, you know, R&D and other people, stuff like that. So a little more context. What should I have done this up front? What is the rules manager? What does that mean? What do you do within Wizards? Just so that we understand where you're coming from as we move forward.
Okay. The rules manager is kind of a unique position. If something can be kind of unique, what it basically does is there's two primary responsibilities. One is kind of to act as an advisor to the rest of R&D as they're developing new cards and new mechanics, and kind of guide the development process to make sure that every new Magic card we make works with every Magic card that we've ever printed. So Magic is a very modular game. It's got like 15,000 cards. They all those pieces have to work together. A lot of them never show up in the same deck. You know, you're like, well, what if there's weird combinations, but everything has to work. There has to be an answer for everything. So it's the rules manager's job to sort of to know that system in and out and to make sure that the designers and developers who may not have the super exact rules knowledge that the rules manager has, they're making cards that are compliant with the system. The second half of rules management is to look back throughout Magic's history and kind of be the caretaker for Oracle, the official wording of all the cards, and work on improvements. Like the rules manager will have definitely a lot to say about templating changes, like when we did dyes or when we create tokens, and applying those changes on cards throughout history. So they're a member of the templating team, so they're talking about cards as they move through design and development. How is this card going to be, you know, if this is something that Magic's never done before, how is it going to be worded? Is it going to have reminder text? If so, what is that reminder text going to say? Is it going to look like this other card that's kind of like it? You know, that sort of thing.
Awesome. And then what, so you're the lead editor for Magic Duels and the upcoming sets. What does that mean? And what role is that?
Yeah, I have several functions within R&D. One of mine is I'm the lead editor for Magic Duels, the award-winning digital game that you can download right now on Steam, iOS, something else, I'm sure, Xbox. I wish I had my marketing copy sitting in front of me. So my job as editor for Duels is kind of twofold. One is to be responsible for all the text that you see in-game. So in the game, we have these things called skill quests, and basically it's a tutorial system that teaches you how to play Magic and then teaches you each new mechanic. I write and develop those. That's part of my job. Also, just all the text you see in the store, in the prompts, and just various locations. I give that a once over as editor. The other thing I do is kind of act as a caretaker for the card sets. Each set in Magic Duels does not have every printed card in a certain set. Like, for example, Aether Revolt. All the cards in Aether Revolt aren't going to be on Magic Duels, but a subset of them are. So I work with the developers to kind of curate that list and determine what goes where.
Got it. All right, cool. Sweet. Thank you for diving into that. So going back to some of the questions. So this one is a bit long, but basically what they're going for is we're talking about mechanics and how several mechanics are, you know, similar. Mainly all the ones that kind of look or smell like kicker or multi-kicker or whatever. So they say, would it be in the interest of, you know, the game to simplify the rules to make a universal mechanic that could be used in such cases that you just kind of build off of? So like, you know, shocking bolt is R and it's instant, it deals 2 damage. And if you paid XYZ, then it does 4 damage. So a different way to kind of bundle, I guess, these kicker variants together is kind of what they're going
for. Sean, slow down there. I can't be listening to unauthorized card designs. That's 2 damage that might deal 3. That's crazy. Hang on. So yes, many players we have also noticed everything is either kicker or split cards. Every mechanic that exists can be expressed as kicker or a split card. That joke gets made a lot. Would it benefit the game to have one kind of overriding ability that covered all these similar mechanics? I'm going to say no, and here's why. Flavor is important. And I think, like, for example, let's take Awaken. Awaken's basically kicker, right? It's pay some more mana, get a bonus effect. We saw this on the original kicker cards. But Awaken really kind of conveys a sense of what's going on in the story in the world. It's, you know, the lands of Zendikar rising up to fight the Eldrazi threat. Like, flavor's important. So I think being able to sort of couch these details in individual keywords, you know, and especially when you have differences, right? Sometimes it's an additional cost. Sometimes it's an alternative cost. There might be slight variations where one overriding ability, you lose a lot of nuance, both in functionality and flavor. So I think that is not overall better for the game.
Yeah. Thank you. I really like that, especially because I enjoy the flavor of Magic a lot. And I really do like how there are mechanics that tie into the sets and whatnot. And that makes perfect sense. So yes, you can do thing A in Magic, and then you can do, you know, thing B if you just pay a little bit more. And yeah, you could kind of cover it with all one big umbrella. But by calling the, you know, the paying the extra thing different things in different sets, you do add to that flavor. And I see that now. And I think that's a really good, yeah, thank you for the response. I think that's really good.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I mean, like, in everything, there are trade-offs, right? Like, would Magic be easier to learn if Kicker just showed up in every set and we didn't have things like Awaken or and, you know, whatever? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, Magic would be easier to learn, but it might be a little less worth learning at that point, right? If the game would just be less awesome. So, like, one of the things I learned as an editor working on templating various cards is a lot of people, especially, you know, players on the outside, they think that the only goal is to have as few words on the card as possible. And, like, that's a big consideration. We don't want super wordy cards, but it's not everything. Sometimes a couple extra words really helps. So.
Awesome. So on that note of the complexity, and as, you know, more and more mechanics come out year after year, what is the plan going forward for the comprehensive rules book? Having a 1,000-page book in some years could be a serious problem for managing its content. What do you think about that?
Shoot, man, I don't know. Well, we stopped printing it. That's one thing. So we are literally saving the rainforest there. There's not a wildly divergent plan from what we're doing. Every year brings, you know, 3 to 27 new sets with some number of mechanics. Things are just kind of slowly creeping forward. We don't have any firm plans for any radical overhauls. So what I'm about to say is just me spitballing. This is not something that we've talked about at length or are planning to do. But I often think about how easy the comp rules would be if we just pretended everything like before M10 didn't exist, right? Like, how much of the rule book could we cut out if we just had sort of the modern, and I don't mean modern the format, but like modern Magic rule book. So that's something we think about. As we move forward, like, getting new players is always the goal, right? There's about 7 billion people on the planet that don't play Magic yet, and we're trying to change that. So we're going to be doing that digitally. We're going to be doing that, you know, through in-store play. And there's so kind of communicating to players and getting them involved and teaching them the rules is something I think about a lot.
Love it. Yeah, last I heard or whatever, this was a while ago, there was 12 million active Magic players in the world. Is that number still accurate or?
Oh, I have absolutely no idea. There's two in the room I'm in right now. If I look out, so we're kind of tucked into this conference room. If I look out, I can see about 12 more.
Okay, good.
I'm having a note being passed to me. Over 20 million players and fans.
There we go.
I don't know exactly what that means, but that's I'm just reading it right off the page.
There we go. I like it. That's cool. That's neat. It's so fun to be part of a growing community and a game that wants to grow and get more people involved. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sweet that there are people living in most countries on Earth that you have something in common with. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. So, Matt, what is the best experience that you've had to date working on Magic the Gathering?
Oh, man. Best experience I've had working on Magic the Gathering. So this is since my time at Wizards. So this is a tough one. I've had a lot of good experiences. I love traveling to events. It's got to be traveling to some event. There's got to be something. All right, I'm going to go with PAX. Last year's PAX, the Pacific Penny Arcade Expo, is a big gaming show up in Seattle every year, late summer. And last year, we did our big Kaladesh debut, and it was huge. We took over the Paramount Theater, which is this old, historic – I think the building was actually built on Kaladesh, which made decorating it pretty easy. We took it over for the whole weekend. We had all kinds of shows and debut events, and we showed off a ton of cards, and we had an outdoor street fair. And there was an improv show that I got to be a part of, my burgeoning improv comedy career. We got to play the Paramount, which is, if you live in Seattle, that's something pretty cool. Not many people can say that. It's like me and Eddie Vedder. So that was a blast. That whole weekend was just insane. Talked to people from all over the world, put on shows, got to walk the streets of Seattle with a bullhorn talking about magic with a giant statue parade following me. That weekend was insane. PAX is great.
That's awesome. That does sound like a lot of fun. I remember, I think it was that one. The first time I clued into PAX, I think it was 2 years ago. And then, I followed it a little bit more last year. And that's when I was like, man, I really want to go to one of these years. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I should tell your listeners, there's a lot of PAX stuff up on our YouTube page. I'm sure all that stuff's archived. Go watch it. It's crazy.
Nice.
We had a blast.
So, Matt, if you could go back to the beginning and make one change to the game to simplify the rules, what would it be?
You'd think I'd read Rosewater's Tumblr enough to know not to mess with time travel, but screw it. I'm chaotic. I would go back. I can think of a bunch of minor tweaks off the top of my head. Instants should actually be sorceries with the instant super type. And that's kind of the boring rules manager answer. What would I change?
Why does that matter? Because I've heard that before. What would that actually do? It was just, why is that a thing?
I think that system might be a little bit easier to teach players. Okay. Like creatures with flash become instant creatures. And I think just being able to say sorceries on things instead of having to say instants or sorceries on things makes cards easier. There's a bunch of cards throughout Magic that would change, which is why making that change now is rough. But if that were the system from the beginning, I think it probably would be a little bit better.
So why is the layers theme not pushed between players? Seems like only judges are the ones who know about it. I'm a level one judge and I don't know everything about it. You're going to have to walk me through this because I just read that question from a listener. I don't even know what he's talking about.
I was a level three judge. I'm the Magic rules manager. Even I don't know everything about it.
I don't even know what it is.
I know how it works. So layers is, for those of you that don't know, is a system to determine essentially the stats of an object. So I've got a creature on the battlefield and I cast Giant Growth on it and it's got some -1/-1 counters and we switched its power toughness earlier in the turn and there's an aura sitting on top of it and now it becomes a copy of something else. How do you determine what this thing looks like?
Right.
How do all these effects interact with one another? So we came up with a system of layers. So basically, we divided these effects into roughly seven types of effects. So first, you're like, are you a copy of something else? If so, apply that. And you move on down the line, finally, with is something affecting your power and toughness? And I apologize, my voice seems to be going out. I've been sick for 2.5 months. So the layers are a system that we've determined to evaluate how continuous effects affect an object, usually a permanent, but not always. The reason why we don't push this is twofold. One, we designed the system to match what we believe is players' intuition a majority of the time. So simply put, we don't tell you the system because you don't need to know the system. The system is designed to where whatever you think the answer is, like if I said, okay, you've got a grizzly bear and here are a bunch of effects, how big is your grizzly bear? And you're like, 7'4"? That's if you've followed the logical progression the way we think you're going to, that's just going to be correct most of the time.
Okay, cool.
So why don't we teach you layers? You don't need to know layers.
There we go.
Now, that being said, they're not really complex once you kind of memorize them. It's the when you have a single continuous effect that applies in multiple layers, trying to figure out how that works, that can get a little hairy. But mostly it's there. Like, the comp rules are basically designed so you don't need the comp rules, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully whatever you think is going to happen, yeah, you're right.
That's awesome. And I love that. Because I've never, like, dove into the rules myself or whatever. But, you know, I understand the game well enough that I can go through and play and solve most problems. And I like that the game is set up in that way that you don't really need to carry it around with you and refer to it every single time you play. So,
Sean, you say you've never really dove into the rules that much, but earlier in the interview, you claimed to be a level one judge.
Oh, no. I was reading the question from the listener. I was reading a question from the listener. So, quote, I read that whole thing. So,
so I'm going to need your DCI number, sir. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was from a listener who was a level one judge, and he was saying that.
Hi, listener, level one judge, wherever you are.
So, as far as judges go, what were your thoughts on when they changed from having five levels of judges to three?
To be honest, I've been out of the judge program for a while now, so I wasn't following along too closely. I still have plenty of friends who are judges, though. The sense I got that they were kind of recognizing in the system that judges have different areas of expertise and strengths, and like someone who's good at like program management but maybe isn't so hot on the floor of a pro tour. Like, I think they did a better job sort of defining what the roles are. And it sounded like collapsing to three levels and then having these kind of like
roles,
like achievement badges.
Yeah.
I can head judge a GP. Great. Here's your badge. That sounded just like a better system. When I started judging, like, it was kind of the Wild West. I was never a level one judge. I was just grandfathered into level two because I scored well on the test. Didn't really say anything for my interpersonal skills. It sounds like the system now is much better at turning out, you know, qualified, capable judges for your local and larger than local events.
Yeah, very cool. So do you have, or rather, what is a late night Vegas draft story that you feel comfortable sharing with us here?
Oh, my goodness. Late night Vegas draft story.
Yeah.
I am positive the best ones I don't remember.
Okay.
Thank goodness. God bless Vegas, man. Late night Vegas draft story. There's so many. So I have a really fun one where it's not a late night draft story, but it is a Vegas magic story where a friend of mine who was actually a testing partner for like pro tours and stuff got arrested for using a hot tub that wasn't his. It's a really weird story. I'm getting a stare down by my friends in public relations right here. So
that's funny. I don't know if this one came from someone who knew you, but they're like, oh, if you want really good stories, ask about late night Vegas drafts. I was like, okay.
I'm getting the evil eye from my PR handler.
We'll pull you out of hot water on that one.
This wonderful person making sure I don't say anything dumb.
And that's totally fine. We respect that. Not a problem. So what is the degree of flexibility that you, as the rules manager, offer the designers and the developer teams when it comes to interactions in the game? What is like the limit of imagination? When is something too complicated? Like, what's that process look like on your end?
Designers and developers have a pretty long leash. And to their credit, they kind of have a pretty good sense of when something is too complex. A lot of the time it's just they'll pitch a mechanic and they're like, I want this mechanic to do this. And then I'll say, okay, in magic templating, here's how it's going to look. And then they'll either say, okay, that's fine. Or, oh, geez, that's way uglier than I thought it was going to be. I'll go rework something. So like we work hand in hand, but generally speaking, the developers kind of get to make the cards they want. They know where the lines are, and they know when and how to push. So as far as complexity, it's a fight because, man, the urge to make complex cards is strong. Like, we do a lot of crazy stuff here. And if you've ever looked at, like, player, like, you know, cards that the public makes, obviously I've never seen any of those because I'm not allowed to. But from what they tell me, it's easy to get really complex.
That's cool that there is that system of checks and balances to make sure that, you know, the game can move forward and that designers and developers can push boundaries, but that it still doesn't get, you know, bogged down with just ridiculousness.
Yeah, there's like our internal database multiverse, you know, there's a commenting system where we communicate with one another, and there's frequently comments from the editors along the lines of, I do not want to print this card. Please make something simpler.
That's pretty funny. So here we are in Kaladesh, and we have vehicles. Now, vehicles, crewing vehicles, is a bit weird flavor-wise. Was it a rules thing that prevented adding a clause that said vehicles couldn't crew other vehicles?
Dude, cars driving cars. How's I got the Aradar Express getting up on, like, a copter? That's sweet. We did talk about it. We considered saying, like, non-vehicles, you know, tap any number of non-vehicles. We decided it just wasn't worth the extra complexity that the flavor hit. Again, like I said before, man, it's all checks and balances, right? We took a small flavor hit, but we made some gains in complexity. Yep. Overall, like, we think we made the right call, but it's not obvious. Like, if we did it the other way, it might have been better. But with so many Magic cards out there doing so many different things, like, there are going to be those flavor misses. Elephants wearing boots, walls of clay wielding machetes, remove soul targeting soulless one. Like, it happens.
That's so funny. I didn't think about that. That's cool. So next year, Magic is going to be celebrating, what, its 25th anniversary of existence? So in your opinion, what are some things that could pose a problem for you, the rules manager, moving forward?
When you say me, the rules manager, remember, I've gotten out of that game. I'm passing on the mantle of rules manager has been passed as of this recording.
Oh.
This recording, actually. Were you not aware of this?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not actually sitting rules manager anymore.
Well, do tell.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm sorry. I thought you knew about this. I'm happy to answer all these questions because I didn't pass on all my knowledge, like, it emptied out of my head and I don't know anything. Yeah, as of a couple months now, a gentleman by the name of Eli Schifrin, who's was a Magic judge. Should I go get him?
Do you want to stop? No. We want you. We know you.
Oh, I get it. You don't want to talk to me? That's cool. We'll get the new guy. That's good. I'm sure he'll be entertaining. He can tell you about his improv. Oh, no, I guess not. Guess he won't be able to do that. Yeah, rules manager now is being handled by Eli Schifrin. I'm still around. It's kind of help, but we're at the kind of the tail end of the transition, so I don't do a whole lot anymore. But I'm happy to talk with you about this.
Sure. So then we'll just rephrase it to Magic's coming up in its 25th year. What are some of your thoughts? What are some things that you might be, you know, sticking points or some problems for the game as a whole from your perspective, you know, moving forward? Because again, 25 years, a lot of history, a lot of stuff going into it. There's obviously a bright future coming, you know, ahead. But what are some things that you see that might be coming down the line?
There are so many challenges that Eli faces as rules manager moving forward. Probably the most significant one is that he's not me. That's going to be rough on him going forward. I mean, he's made it this far. He has not been me to date, and he's gotten along just fine. But no, Eli is awesome. He's super capable. It's going to be great. But some of the challenges are going to face him. It's year 25. Magic isn't going anywhere. Alpha continues to exist. So every new card that comes out has to work with all the cards that came before it. That's going to be a challenge. Man, there's so many challenges. A lot of it is going to be this new digital age that we're going into.
Yeah.
Right? There's Magic Online. You might see other expressions of Magic in the future. And working on those is going to be hard to kind of the complexities of human interaction. Replicating that on, like, we face this challenge a lot with Magic Online, where there are cards that are like, well, if two people are sitting next to each other and they can talk to each other, they can figure out how to resolve this. But you know, Magic Online needs to be very exacting in its standards. So this is why the comp rules long, long ago were kind of rewritten, and they kind of bear some resemblance to code, right? It's still a human document. It is still made for people to be able to read and understand it. But there's some of the rigors of coding kind of built in to make it more feasible for a digital expression like Magic Online to be able to capture all of the complexities and the intricacies of Magic cards and the way they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Ah, it's going to be fun. Yeah, I mean, so...
Did all those words make sense?
They did.
Because our PR department wrote that answer. And I want to make sure I read it correctly.
You did. And it sounded natural and off the cuff. So you did a great job.
Three of those words I just learned. So...
That's awesome. And, you know, when you mentioned the, you know, passing the baton from you to Eli happened, you know, a little bit ago, it brings to mind for me right now the passing of baton going up, you know, going down even higher up in Wizards right now. So there's a lot of, like, new changes that are coming down that, you know, we are just getting wind of and that, you know, are just, you know, happening within your organization, huh?
Yeah, so we have a relatively new CEO, Chris Cox, who's really a cool guy. I finally got a chance to sit down to actually, like, game with him. He's got this thing where he's kind of working his way through the company, what he calls his board game lunches, where we kind of get 3-4 people, sit with him, and we just kind of, like, you know, shoot the breeze for an hour and talk about, you know, how our job's going, what Magic's up to, or, you know, D&D or whatever we work on. And then, so, yeah, he's a pretty cool guy. I can tell you, here's some insider info that I don't know has been made public anywhere else. One of my favorite changes that happened, actually just before he got here, but he has kept it on. There's free soda here at Wizards of the Coast now, and I love it. It's great. We can just get free food. That'd be awesome. We just announced we have a new digital studio.
Right.
Working on all kinds of things that either I can't talk about, I don't know about, or both. So that's exciting. I'm sure they can't wait to release some news on something. I'm waiting with bated breath also.
Awesome.
And this may just be the cold medicine talking, but I'm really optimistic about Magic, man. It's going places here year 25. It can rent a car. It can date other games. It can vote. It's been able to vote for a while now.
That's good. That's good.
Super exciting.
So what would be your suggestions what is the suggested way for someone to break into a company such as Wizards of the Coast? And I don't think that the questioner meant breaking in as in like an unlawful entry. I think they meant, you know.
So the southwest corner of the building, if you bring a crowbar, there's a loose panel.
With a time capsule from 25 years ago that has a Black Lotus.
Right. If you want to work here, the best way to get in the building is deliver food to us and then just don't leave. Like if you work at Pizza Hut or something and we order, just come and then just don't go. Just sit somewhere and act like you know what you're doing.
Take off your uniform, sit at a computer.
If you have a laptop, bring it. You'll fit right in. Okay, best advice. You want to work at the company. That's awesome. Working at Wizards is cool. I do it. Lots of people do it. We love it. We would love to have you join us. My best advice for getting a job here is, one, apply for a job here. It is possible that we are going to come find you and ask you to join us, but it's even likelier that you will work here if you find a job opening at wizards.com/jobs and find something you qualify for and apply for it. Like any company, Wizards has needs. Like, we've got work to do. We need people that can do that work. So prove to us that you are qualified for some position. We're all about excited gamers working here. If you know and love our products, we're way more likely to want to work with you. So if you're a Magic player, you want to, you know, do something with Magic, that's great. Yeah, just try. Be cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Rosewater, you know, don't focus more on what you can do for us because you're a qualified job applicant. Like, I've actually sat in on interviews with people kind of that overhit the, like, this is my dream job. I would love to work here. Like, we know, like, that's cool to say, but that can't be everything. You know, we want to hire you. Why? Why are you awesome? Tell us why you're awesome. You're awesome.
That's what I tell people when I was my last tour in the Navy. It was as a recruiter for officers. And I would tell them that, be like, you know, because they had to write a statement as well. And I would say, the Navy knows what you're going to get out of it. Like, we know what we're giving you. Like, this is your opportunity to tell us what you're bringing to the table. So we want to see what you've done. We want to see a challenge that you overcome in your life and how you did that and how you're going to, you know, be able to apply that to, you know, leadership as a naval officer. So same thing. Like, people want to work for Wizards because it's awesome and they love magic. They grew up with it. And like you said, you know that. Now they just need to show you what skills they can bring. So. Cool. Love it.
Yeah. What's really cool about working here, it's probably not unique to Wizards. You get this at good companies, is there are so many opportunities to contribute and get involved beyond what strictly your job description is. Like, I'm a senior editor. I have a list of duties that I'm, you know, responsible for, but my fingers are in so many more pies than that, right? Like, I'm on a development team. I'm doing some technical writing. I'm doing some creative writing. If there are things you want to do, the time will be made for you to do that. Like, you will have every opportunity to contribute no matter what your job is. Like, you can get a job in customer service. You can get a job in business intelligence. You can get a job in finance. If the wretched among you could get a job in PR, the poor cursed souls walking the earth devoid of humanity could go work for public relations. It's wow, what's that look? But if you will, like, if you want to make magic cards, no matter what your job is, you'll have that chance. So there may be a member of our highly qualified PR staff sitting next to me right now.
And she is awesome. So we'll give her that.
Give me the giggles. Getting the giggles over here.
So, Matt, we love to ask all of our guests, no matter where they're from or what they do in magic or whatever, in your experience, through playing, through judging, through, you know, working, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
Biggest mistake I see players make is the biggest mistake I see myself make over and over and over again. And that's failing to recognize your mistakes and learn from them. And blaming losses on dumb luck. Here's the thing. In magic, you're gonna lose sometimes because of dumb luck. But it is super rare to play the perfect game of magic. And a lot of it is, yeah, there's chance involved. You're gonna draw different cards. Things are gonna go your way sometimes and not go your way other times. But magic is a skill game, and you have an enormous amount of control over what happens. So you can't just – if you lose a close one and, like, something didn't go your way, you got to be honest with yourself and look over that game and, like, what did you put yourself in the best position to win? Maybe you did and things didn't go your way, and that's going to happen. But you can't just, like, rage quit and not learn from mistakes. You're not going to get better that way.
So what is something that you have learned from magic that you've been able to take to another area of your life?
There are other areas of my life?
Perhaps.
Oh, man. I'm excited to learn about these. Something I've learned from magic. Well, from working on magic, I've learned a lot about collaboration. I'm not by nature one that works well with others, but I've learned how to do that. Being part of magic teams. So that's cool. Let's see. What did I learn from playing magic that I can apply to other areas of my life? This is a good question. Is this your question? Or is this
yeah,
a list
no, these are mine. These are some of the regular ones that we go through.
Yours are harder, man. I don't know. Here's a good one. Here's something I've learned from magic, and it is basically the core of my being. Fun is everything.
I like that. Fun is everything. I normally ask what's the deepest thing you've learned about yourself as well, but I think that kind of wraps it up as well. You know, that fun is everything, and it sounds like you like to make things fun. We can tell in your voice and how you present yourself and how you talk about all aspects of your journey. You love fun and you like to spread that to other people. And so we definitely appreciate you and the fun that you are, you know, sharing with us and with those that you come in contact with.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
So as we pull into the home stretch here, Prodigies out there, I want to remind you, if you want to connect with Matt, the best place to do that is on Twitter. You can find him at Tayback Rules. Even though he's not the rules manager, surprise, he's still at Tayback Rules. So you can find him there.
I still do.
You can ask him follow-on questions, say thanks for being on the show, and let him know. Yeah, let him know how much you enjoyed having him here. So Matt, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you've already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end.
In magic, as in life, you get out of it what you put into it. I just heard that on a radio show. Does that sound good? Is that all right?
I love it. That sounds amazing.
But, oh, here's a good piece of advice I got from a very good friend of mine named Tim Shields, who's a tournament organizer in the Southwest. He's run a bunch of Grand Prix. Life ultimately is about the connections you make to other people. So that's where the value is. And if you have, you know, friends, you only get one trip through life. So be good to people. And this is, I'm not crying, you're crying. And I'm going to go take some more NyQuil.
I love it. Well, Matt, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, which are many, obviously. We wouldn't have the game that we know today without you and what you've done, you know, in and outside of Wizards. So thank you. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you taking the time and sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers. And it's been a blast chatting with you.
It's fine. I'm so happy. You had me on the podcast and said all these nice things. I don't deserve it.
May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Peace out, G.
Well, hot diggity, what'd you think of that? We had Matt Tabak on the show, the longest running rules manager of Magic the Gathering. As we learned on the episode, news to me, he is no longer the rules manager, but that is what he did for a long, long time there at Wizards. So that's pretty cool that we had him on the show. Got to talk about some of the ins and outs of behind the scenes stuff at Wizards. It's always fun. He is the second Wizards employee that we had on the show and loved having Matt on. Thank you so much, Matt. As always, Prodigies, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Matt Tabak. Look them up there. There'll be a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. And I do want to say how excited I am for the Pro Tour. It is starting today. It's this weekend over there in Dublin. And I love that we have this new team structure. I love that we have some great players going there, some awesome past guests who are going to go and fly their flags. And I'm really, really pumped to see what comes out of the Pro Tour. So definitely stay tuned. I'll be tuning into the coverage over the weekend. I'll definitely talk about it more next week. And of course, we'll be inviting the top 16 players of the Pro Tour onto the show. So also another huge thank you to the patrons. I love you all. Thank you so much for your support. I'm able to hire out the show notes and the editing, and we almost have that covered based off your contributions. So thank you, thank you, thank you. It really means a lot to me. I love doing the show for you, and I appreciate your support. Since we just started a new month, I will be conducting the patron-exclusive drawing next week and announcing the winner of that, so stay tuned. If you're interested in throwing your hat in that ring, mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go for that. It's just a way to give back to the show if you're able to. That goes to the show notes and my podcast editor to help the show run smoothly. I love doing this show twice a week, and I'm so grateful for my team members who make that possible, because there's a lot that goes into it. So thank you, team, and thank you, patrons, for making that possible. And then last reminder, snapcarster.com/Kickstarter if you're interested in checking out this cool new all-in-one Magic app that is entering its open beta right now. And they are in the process of expanding the platforms that they're on from Android to the iOS. And that's what the Kickstarter is for, is to make that possible. So check it out. There's some videos there to let you know what you're getting into. I have been using it, and it is pretty cool. They do have a very fast scanning feature, which is nice, and I look forward to their other features as well. So snapcarster.com/Kickstarter is where you can go to learn more and support them if you so choose. Thanks so much for joining me today. I am Sean of The Gathering. I love doing this for you. Super excited that you are listening, and I can't wait to connect with you again in the very near future. Until then, take care, be safe, play some magic, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.